Thanks for joining us here on WPR. Larry Mueller here, and today is a tech update. And we're talking about buying refurbished computers, phones, and tablets with our guest, Beth D'Angelo. She's a senior IT specialist in UW-Madison's Division of Information Technology. And, well, how old is your computer? How are you keeping it running as the years go by? Maybe you've bought used technology. What was your experience like? We'd love to hear from you. And, of course, we'll also take your general tech questions as well. Join in the number to call 800-642-1234. 1-800-642-1234 or email to ideas@wpr.org. ideas@wpr.org. Beth D'Angelo, welcome back. Good to have you with us.
Good morning, Larry. It's good to be here. How are you?
Well, I'm doing pretty well. I've got some old computer equipment. I was thinking about my phone. I've never purchased an old phone, but what I do is when I feel like I want a new one, I wait till the latest iPhone comes out, and then I take the version that was before it, just before it, and I get a big break. But talking about, and that's new stuff anyway, it's at least new to me, but a lot of stuff gets outdated. But and do you find that you end up with a lot of older or unused electronic items yourself?
Yeah, I do have like an old cell phone graveyard in a drawer.
Yeah, I do too.
Right, so it's a collection of probably the last. I'm sure it's every cell phone I've had since I started owning cell phones. So there's a bunch of them in there. I don't generally tend to get rid of mine when I'm done using them. Just I kind of like to hang on to them in case there's anything I ever want to recover at a future time, or I don't want to have to go through the trouble of wiping all the data off of it. So I've got a drawer full of them. But I do also often look for refurbished technology to purchase rather than buying new. And your strategy of waiting for the latest model year to be launched and then purchasing the previous model year is an excellent way to get the newer products at a discount.
I mean, a big discount, too, usually.
Oh, yeah. It goes down, you know, with iPhones, things like that. Once they launch a new iPhone, usually the previous version goes down by a couple hundred dollars pretty immediately.
Yeah. Yeah, for sure. Well, sometimes these older electronic items, I guess you could say, are still in working condition, but could use some updates. Maybe I've got one that needs a new battery, for example. What are a few basic things you can do to ensure your device has a longer life?
Yeah, absolutely. So depending on the age of the device, it may be hard to find things like a new battery for it, or, you know, if it's a laptop and you need to replace a part, or say you need a new charging cable for it, or the battery just doesn't hold a charge. Oftentimes going to, you know, where you would normally buy your computer parts, like a Best Buy or something like that, they're not going to carry parts for older model years. I've had really good luck finding parts on eBay. You do have to hunt a little bit, and you have to know what you're looking for. So it does require a little bit of tech savvy to figure it out. And if you're not comfortable doing that on your own, there are some of the smaller computer shops around town that do work on older equipment. Madison Computer Works is one that I've used many, many times. And most, you know, decent-sized cities have at least one or two local electronic shops that will do that kind of work for you.
You know, sometimes it's happened to me, my phone or my computer is slowed down. And in my case, it's often just the files. I've got too many stupid files in there.
Yeah, often it's there's too many things running in the background. It's not always that you have a lot of files on there, but it's that there are too many things that are running behind the scenes that you may not be using, but they're taking up all of the resources that your computer has, doing things that you don't necessarily want them to. So a good place to check always is in, if you're using a Windows machine, there's a folder called Startup. If you go into your Start menu, usually you can find the Startup menu listed as one of those. If not, you can go into your profile on your hard drive, go into that startup folder, and every program that's listed in that folder will launch itself automatically when you boot the computer up. So there may be a whole bunch of processes that are running that you just don't need to have there. Deleting them from that folder will actually stop that from happening.
But how do you know?
How do you know if it's something you want running or you don't want running? Generally you don't need programs to launch out of that folder in order for the computer to work as normal. It's just launching extra applications. So it may be something that was like a checkbox that you didn't uncheck when you installed something that, told the computer to put this in the startup folder so it launches automatically. So you can go through there and kind of figure out, you know, if you do want something to start up automatically on your machine, you leave it in that folder. But if that's not a necessity of yours, it's not a personal preference, then delete it. It's not going to hurt anything.
Duane in Westfield has a comment on older tech. So let's go there. Hi, Duane.
Hey, how you doing? I've been doing repairing computers and stuff since 1980, and I'll be honest with you. Some of the new things, it's not bad, it's not shabby to have, but some of the older stuff that you find at new and used places still can be updated without a problem. And a lot of the places, like in the state of Wisconsin, I know one of the better places to look for it for stuff like that would be at Milwaukee PC. They have a couple warehouses. Also, if people are looking for older drivers to make things work, they can also look in windrivers.com, which will have every driver known to man from the very beginning, from Windows 90, from every system and operating system from 95 all the way up until now.
Beth, what do you think?
Yeah, that's an excellent tip and something to think about when you are purchasing older technology. If you're going to be connecting something else to that technology, you need to make sure that you have proper drivers, which are a small piece of software that runs in the background that basically tells a piece of hardware how to talk to another piece of hardware. And if you're working on older technology that may have an older version of an operating system on it, it may not have the most or the drivers that are compatible with the device that you're using out of the box. That may be something that you need to download on your own and load onto the machine so that you can use that external device. But there are multiple sites out there where you can download pretty much any Windows driver you can imagine for a peripheral device.
Yeah. Duane, thank you. Appreciate the call. Mary Lou in Westfield emailed. She's been trying to update her old MacBook, which she got refurbished in 2016, so she has no idea how old it is. She can see the update and it starts installing but never finishes. And is it just, maybe it's just too old to update? The computer keeps telling her it's time to update but then can't do it.
Yeah, it's altogether possible that the hardware she's using isn't capable of updating to the newest version of the operating system that's available. And unfortunately, I believe with Apple products, it's a bit more difficult to get the in-between versions of the operating system. So what's happening is if you're working on a 10-year-old laptop and you're trying to go through the automatic update process, it's trying to download the latest version, whereas the laptop you're working on may only be able to update to a version that's in between where it is now and where that latest version is at. So you may need to look for the particular model of laptop you have and what the latest iOS update available for that particular piece of hardware would be. And that's the one you need to update to.
There you go. Thanks for that email. By the way, you can join in too at 800-642-1234. Or like Mary Lou, you can email to ideas@wpr.org. Storage space. Freeing up storage space on your computer or your phone. On the phone, I found it. I've gone through, I'll sit down for a half an hour and go through my photos, for one thing. And I usually have about three versions of the same darn picture, and I'll eliminate a couple of them. I can free up a fair amount of space that way, but what are other tricks?
Yeah, definitely going through your photos. Those are going to take up a lot of space. Also, if you have a lot of videos downloaded on your phone, those take up an enormous amount of space. Another place where you can go through and clean out the storage, at least on an iPhone, if you go into the general settings, there is an iPhone storage setting that you can go into. It will tell you how much storage each application on your phone is using. So you can see if maybe you have an application that downloads a lot of data, like an application for audiobooks or something of that nature. It may be hanging on to a lot of data that you can offload. And within that storage section, you can go through and tell it to delete data, or you can delete the app itself.
Yeah, makes good sense. Clara was telling me about digital health monitoring, and I wasn't quite sure. Maybe you can talk about what it as a way to extend the life of your electronic device. So what is digital health monitoring, and how can you access the feature on your device?
Yeah, so digital, like, you can take a look at what is happening on your computer really easily while you're doing kind of your normal tasks. So let's say I normally have my email program open and, you know, a couple of dozen browser tabs because I never close those, and you know, a couple other programs running at the same time. And I want to know basically how things are running on that machine at that given moment. There's something called the Task Manager on a Windows machine. The easiest way to get to it is to, at the bar at the bottom of your screen, to right-click on that and then click on the Task Manager button. And that brings up a really handy built-in tool that allows you to look at the performance of your machine. If you click on the Performance tab, you can see how much memory the programs that you're using are using up versus how much memory you actually have. You can see if the CPU, if the actual processor is too slow. You can see if your Wi-Fi is running really slow. Gives you a lot of data, especially on the newer versions of Windows, to kind of tell what the health of your machine is at any given time.
How do you decide if it's worth it to make those fixes to older items or if you should just buy a new one?
I guess it really depends on your one, confidence in your ability to make the changes to the system to upgrade it. So if, let's say, for instance, things are running slow and you have room for more memory and you want to add more memory to your computer, it's a pretty simple process to do that. But you'd have to be comfortable with opening up your computer and putting a new chip into the right place and doing that without breaking anything else. Personally, I'm very comfortable with doing that, but that, you know, is really a spectrum. If it requires you to download and install a new operating system, sometimes that can be a complicated process, reinstalling an operating system. So that's a time which you may want to look to a local computer shop to do that for you, or you know, someone who's done that in the past that can walk you through it. But it has gotten a lot easier to do those things yourself. In recent years, they've created much more user-friendly interfaces for those things. And I would say, really, it's about if you're comfortable with what you have, and it's really a matter of you just want to make it a little bit faster, work a little bit better. Looking at upgrading the hardware or upgrading the operating system could help you out. But jumping into buying something brand new isn't always necessary.
Beth D'Angelo, Senior IT Specialist of UW-Madison's Division of Information Technology, our guest today. Tyler Ditter is our technical director today, and Clara Neipert, our producer. I'm Larry Mueller for WPR. Taking a look at your computers and all your electronics today with our guest, Beth D'Angelo, who is an IT specialist. She's worked at the UW-Madison's Division of Information Technology for a long time, loves to find creative solutions to problems. You can join in 800-642-1234, email to ideas at WPR.org. Lou in Adams online. Let's go there. Lou, hi.
Hi, how are you? Thanks for taking my call, Larry and guests.
Sure.
We have an older Aspire desktop computer. We just got a new Canon PIXMA MG2500 series printer. I've been trying to hook it up, and first it'll say the computer has detected the printer, then it will say it is not detecting it, and then if I look deep, it'll say it's because we have Usenet, which is a metered connection. However, if you read online, it sounds like a zillion people have had this same issue, whether they have a metered connection or not. I'm just trying to figure out how to get this printer to work. I tried running the CD-ROM, you know, and doing the installation like 6 times.
Okay. Beth, that is not an uncommon problem.
Yeah, just a quick question. Do you know what version of Windows your computer is running?
I believe it is 10.
Windows 10?
Yeah.
Okay. It may be that the Canon printer that you purchased is trying to communicate with what it thinks is a Windows 11 computer when you're running Windows 10, and the installation wizard isn't finding the right driver. And we were just talking about drivers a few minutes ago in another conversation. The driver is that piece of software that your printer needs in order to be able to talk to your computer. And if the installer that's automatically running when you try to install it through Windows isn't seeing the right version, that's likely why it's failing to install fully. But what you can do is go directly to Canon's website. And instead of using the automatic connection for downloading and installing the driver, you can look up your particular printer model on Canon's website and find the Windows 10 driver version and download that directly. So you'll download a file from Canon and you'll run that file. That will install your printer instead of using the automatic Windows installer.
Perfect solution. Thanks, Lou, for calling. Appreciate it. James in New Berlin, your turn.
Oh, yes. Hello. Good morning. Thanks for taking my call as well. I have a couple of Samsung tablets that I use as sheet music readers. I run a little band, and the sheet music software I use is called Mobile Sheets Pro, which is basically a file system that accesses just the PDFs, individual PDF files to read the music. So what I want to be able to do is prevent someone, a third party, from being able to take those PDFs off of the tablet. And I'm thinking I need to create a dedicated user, but I'm not sure how to set that up. I know how to set up a restricted user profile, but I'm not sure how to control the software so it doesn't allow access to take the files off the tablets.
Yeah, I'm not sure with Mobile Sheets if there's a setting to be able to do it in that particular program, but another PDF program, Adobe Acrobat is the one that I normally use. It gives you the ability to lock the PDF files that you're creating with a password, so you can set those to only be able to be copied or moved or downloaded from where they live with a password. It sets encryption on those files and basically locks them down so that changes or movement of that file isn't allowed unless you have a password. So if that is an option in Mobile Sheets, I would set that up on that program. Otherwise, you may want to think about using Adobe Acrobat as your PDF creator because it does have that ability.
Yeah, there you go, James. Thank you for calling. Appreciate it. Benny emailed, he's looking at buying a new laptop, thinking about getting the warranty, not sure if you could advise on that, but wonders, you know, would it be a good idea? What could go wrong on a new computer?
Yeah, warranties are tricky with computers because often they only cover the hardware, so they're only going to cover anything if there's something physically broken within the machine, and they're not going to cover things like, you know, if you need a security update, if you get a virus, if your operating system gets corrupted, or if you have any other problems with the usage of the computer other than, you know, a failure of the hardware, the warranty isn't really going to do much for you. That said, if it's not an expensive warranty that you buy along with the product, it's a good idea to have just for, especially if it's, you know, a mobile device or a laptop that you're going to be traveling around with. If you drop it, if it gets broken, then you have the assurance that whatever parts need to be replaced, you won't have to pay for out of pocket.
Or drop it in the lake like I did.
Right. I'm not sure if the warranty would cover that.
Well, I'm not going to go into that. Let's go to Zoki and Conover. Hi, Zoki.
How's it? You know, I live in South Africa where I had 256 megabits per second on my internet line. And up here in Conover, I have 8. Now, I've got a Lenovo IdeaPad with an i7 processor. It's a year old. I know how to work this stuff. So this morning, again, while I'm trying to access websites, it's taken forever to download. I mean, like, if I told you 2.5 to 3 minutes, and then it would kick me out and say reload. And then when I did the speed test with Ookla on my phone, it's showing that I have 8 megabits per second. So why is my computer running so slow?
Yeah, that's an interesting thought. I immediately jumped to a potential mismatch in the frequency between, if you're using Wi-Fi to connect to your internet from your laptop. Most Wi-Fi routers have dual band, so they run in two different frequencies. My only thought is that it's possible that there's a mismatch between the frequency that you're using for your laptop to communicate with your router, and that's slowing things down. So you may want to take a look at your router to see if that is something that is a setting that you could change. That can often cause problems. But, you know, out of the box, that shouldn't happen.
No.
Especially if they're both newer pieces of equipment. The only other thing I can think of is that there may be some sort of malware on the machine and running, a malware detection software on there to make sure there aren't any like bots running in the background that may be using up bandwidth unbeknownst to you from your computer that aren't doing it from your phone.
So no, I'm running Norton, 360 and
yeah, Norton on there. Yeah.
Yeah. And then, I know the normal speed of that, but it's just like this morning it was so slow. And then, with the 8 megabits per second, it started running faster about an hour and a half later. So I'm trying to figure out
really, what
is causing that. Yeah, it was weird, but it's probably like what my mother said. Without bad luck, I wouldn't have any. So
it's a good way to look at it.
In the end, he should go down and
Honestly, I might shake my fist at my internet service provider if I was only getting 8 megabit connections. That's pretty slow. So it's possible that, the service they're providing out to your location is undersized for the number of people that they're serving. There could be fluctuations in the amount of bandwidth that they're able to provide at any home at any one given time. But it's difficult to diagnose something like that, without being on site with some equipment.
Yeah, for sure. Sorry, you've got one or two things to check on there, Zoki. But other than that, that's as far as we can go. Let's put it that way. Thank you for calling. Jack in Cedarburg, your turn. Hi, Jack.
Hey, Larry. I have a question. I have a Dell laptop. And I run Microsoft browser. It's the Edge. And about 2 or 3 months ago, when I would open go to a website, doesn't matter which website, and it would allow me to open that, and that's the only one that would open. But then when I would be fooling around on that website, meaning typing in username and a password, another window would open up, and I think I'm typing on the original site that I was on, and I look up and it's, something for vacations, or it seems like whatever that window is that pops up is kind of related to what the original one. was related to. So if I was on a banking website, I would get a Capital One thing pop up. If I was on a travel website, I'd get some travel-related thing pop up. And it isn't, and then I have to delete it and go back to where I originally was. So does that make sense?
Yeah, absolutely. And actually, from the description of the behavior, it sounds to me like there is something called, it's a malicious third-party extension, which isn't a virus per se, but it's an extension that can get installed within the Edge browser that will cause it to behave in ways that you're not telling it to behave. And you can actually take a look when you open your browser on the right-hand side of the address bar. There should be a little, let's see, you select the extensions button. And then if you go to more actions, that'll give you a list of the extensions and you can remove those from the Edge browser. So if you see anything in that list of extensions that you haven't explicitly installed in there yourself, meaning you chose to seek out this extension and install it in your browser because it provided some functionality that you were looking for, I would just remove anything that's in that extensions list, and it should stop that behavior.
Yeah, there you go, Jack. Thank you for calling. John in Elgin, Illinois, on to you now. Hi, John.
Hi. I listen to your show almost every day, and here's the last couple of months, I listen on my iPad. I'll open it up and get your website and listen to the program, and all at once the iPad just drops the program or drops the audio. And I go to my phone. I can listen on my phone, and it works just fine. I'm listening to you right now on my iPhone, but the iPad just won't continue the broadcast.
It's interesting.
Does that happen with any other broadcast that you're listening to, or just this one in particular?
You know, I'm so I'm so dedicated to Wisconsin.
Dedicated
Public
to
Radio.
Larry.
That's about all I listen to.
Without seeing it happen on my own, it's hard to tell what's happening. Are you able to go back in and start back up the broadcast and pick up where you left off, or does it just like stop letting you do it for a period of time?
No, I have to delete the website and start all over and open it up again, and then it'll give me the broadcast for anywhere from 5 minutes to 15 minutes, but then it will drop it.
Yeah, it sounds like possibly you might need to update the operating system on your iPad. Sometimes if it's using an old version of a browser, it can be a little bit buggy trying to play audio files, especially live broadcast audio or video. So I would take a look at the settings on your iPad. And if you go to this, the general settings, usually there is an update setting. Go in there and see if it's telling you that you need an update.
Yeah.
So I would run that.
We just did an update on our app, and I think the updates fix that problem with our app. So if you do the updates on your iPad,
you're going to update the iOS, the operating system on it. So, if you go into the general settings, there will be a section in there for updating the operating system where you can set that up to happen.
Yeah, I think because we made some changes to the app. So I think if you do that, you're going to be happier, John. Thank you very much. I think Jill Nadeau was just telling me she had to do that herself. There you go, John. Good luck. Thank you for that question, for sure, because probably a lot of other people have the same issue. You can join in, too, by the way. Number to call, 800-642-1234. Email to ideas@wpr.org. Grant emailed us. He uses a mid-2012 MacBook Air for a few specific purposes. because some old software wasn't updated for modern Macs. For those who still use vintage MacBook laptops, a company called OWC still offers new replacement batteries. Installation is a breeze with the simplest of tools, and the cost is very reasonable for MacBook laptops. OWC is the name of the company. You familiar with that one, Beth?
Yeah, OWC, it looks like they do like aftermarket parts for Macintosh products. So they're not actually made by Apple, but they do sell aftermarket parts so that you can upgrade those older machines that Apple might not be carrying parts for.
Marilyn emailed us, is it okay to have two security programs on her laptop? She has Norton and McAfee.
No, absolutely not. No. They will fight with each other.
Yeah.
And we've run into this many times, you know, in different places when I've been doing support for folks, is that, yeah, the double protection isn't actually better. Those two pieces of software will essentially work against each other in some ways because they utilize some of the same pieces of your operating system to try to do their job. And if they're both trying to do it at the same time, it can cause problems for both pieces of software.
McAfee tells her to get rid of Norton.
Yeah, Norton probably tells her to get rid of McAfee. So,
get rid of one of them.
Yep.
Do you have a preference on one or the other?
I use Norton personally. It's just something I've used for many, many years. They're both really highly regarded products, and either is a really good choice.
Okay, let's take a call from Jim in Hudson next. Hi, Jim.
Hello, are you there?
Yeah, go ahead.
I think you just hit on what is my question, although it may have been coincidental. But my question is, do you or your expert there have a list or even a favorite software program that would for malware, for viruses and that kind of thing. I never know what I should be buying. I've got the opportunity to buy, Mac Keeper and Malware Bytes and all kinds of things. And half of them I think are scams, although I don't know it. And I'm just wondering if there's one or two or three best systems for someone like me. I've got a MacBook Air and a couple of iPhones, and I've been buying these Apple products for a long time, and I won't go into complaining about the lack of compatibility amongst all the wires and all that stuff, but my main question is that just about virus protection and malware.
Yeah, absolutely. So I personally, like I said earlier, I use Norton 360. That's really just my personal preference. McAfee is also another very reputable product. There are others that are less comprehensive, or there are parts of virus protection suites. So you can buy kind of pieces, parts that do various, I guess, individual pieces of the whole security protection package. But something like Norton or McAfee will roll up all of those applications into one suite of software that will do things like firewalling, it'll do antivirus, it'll do anti-malware. You can also do security scanning. You can set up web filters. And I like the way they're doing it now, where you can purchase on a subscription basis and you get a certain number of devices that subscription covers you for. So you don't have to buy a new version for every device you own. So let's say you go with something like Norton 360, you pay a single fee yearly for the subscription, and then you can install it on, I think, up to 5 devices. So you can have protection on your laptop, protection on your tablet, on your phone, any other devices that you're using through one software package, which I highly recommend for ease of use.
Yeah, absolutely. Jim, there you go. Thank you very much for calling. And on to Jeff and Barry Mills. Hi, Jeff.
Yes, hello, folks. I'm not very computer literate, and I'm just trying to found a local guy that sells used computers, and I'm just looking to get something with a bigger screen besides my phone. So I mostly look at Google Earth a lot, but I'd probably end up using it for email and take some of the pressure off my phone all the time. But I was wondering if you could make any recommendations on what I should maybe look for. I'm going to put my trust in this guy probably, but I'd like to see what you have to say on what I should look for on a limited budget.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. If you're looking for something that, you know, you can use for email, and if you're really into using Google Earth and, you know, any of the other like GIS systems or any other mapping stuff, or I know there's a lot of cool software out there. There are a lot of apps for the iPads that are, you know, would give you that bigger screen than your phone. It's, you know, that very interactive touchscreen feel. So you don't have to go all the way to a laptop for your next step up, but you can stick with kind of like a bigger version of your phone by going to an iPad or a tablet like that. Especially if you're really only looking to use it for like internet browsing, Google Earth, email, those types of things. You may be able to get an earlier generation iPad from the fellow you found who's selling used hardware. That would save you a significant amount of money. I personally use a second generation iPad Air that I purchased this year for about $150. So I got that on eBay. So it's easy to find older tech that can work for your purposes if they're very specific like that.
Yeah, that's great. Jeff, good luck with that. Appreciate your call. Well, refurbished, this is kind of sounds like a refurbished. Is there a...
Yep.
And there's a kind of a big market for refurbished electronics, isn't there?
Yeah, it's kind of funny. I found this interesting phenomenon amongst my kids' generation. So my children are teenagers right now. And they're looking at our vintage technology, as they call it, our vintage tech, as something that they're interested in now. My oldest daughter purchased a Discman to listen to CDs on, which I thought was incredible. The kids want to actually own their media now rather than relying so much on streaming services, because on the streaming services, you don't really own anything. So there's this now kind of trend backlash, I guess, towards vintage or older or legacy media using things like old MP3 players. Now that iPods are, you know, they died the quiet death. There's a big secondary market for old iPods. People are looking to use non-smartphones or dumb phones, flip phones, because they feel very distracted by having a smartphone in their pocket all the time. So this older technology is actually regaining value in the marketplace. And I don't know, I'm starting to look at my graveyard of old phones as maybe something I should look to sell on eBay.
Beth D'Angelo, our guest, senior IT specialist of UW-Madison's Division of Information Technologies. Questions for her? Give a call. The number is 800-642-1234. Email to ideas@wpr.org. I'm Larry Mueller. You're listening to Wisconsin Public Radio. We're taking a look at your electronics today on the show with our guest, Beth D'Angelo, senior IT specialist of UW-Madison's Division of Information Technology. Questions? Give a call, 800-642-1234. Email to ideas@wpr.org, and we'll get you on pretty quickly. Kevin in Eagle River, we'll give you a chance. Hi, Kevin.
Hey, Larry. I just wanted to mention to Miss D'Angelo, when I've had the Apple products for quite a few years, and every time I've ever called their tech support, they've basically told me you don't need anything besides Malwarebytes, the free version, and keep your history clean, and you won't get next to anything on a Mac. So
yeah,
I've been really lucky with that.
Keep your history clean. Well, Kevin, thank you. Beth, what do you think?
I think, yeah, you're a lot less likely to get viruses and malware on an Apple product, mainly because there are far fewer viruses and malware that are written for Apple products. That's growing because of, you know, the number of folks who use Apple iPhones. But as far as, like, computer-related viruses that aren't your mobile phone, There are far more out there that are written for Windows-based machines than there are for Apple. So the numbers are in your favor if you're using an Apple product, but there's still possibility that you could get infected with some sort of malware or virus if you're not using any additional protection on your machine. I recommend it just, you know, as that added level of security. But I think a lot of folks on the Mac side, you know, who have been using them for years, like I have, have been using Mac products for all of my career. And they do tend to see far fewer malicious software attacks.
Yeah. My first computer was not a Mac, and I essentially lost all kinds of things on that computer, and I bought a Mac, and that was a long, long time ago, and I've been doing it ever since. Kevin mentioned keep your history clean, and I'm sure somebody probably thought, well, how do I keep my history clean on my Mac?
Well, I think maybe clearing out the information that's stored on your browser is maybe what Kevin was talking about. So going into the settings for your browser and clearing the cache. If you go to the settings on whatever browser you're using, generally there's an area where you can hit the clear cache button. That's going to basically delete any of the cookies and browser history and add-ins that may have gunked up the works, so to speak.
Kevin, thanks a bunch for calling. Appreciate it. Jerry in Prairie du Chien emailed. They have an Epson ET7700 five-color printer they bought at least 5 years ago. They bought it since their original research indicated it would give them professional quality color digital photos as well as professional quality copies of color paper photos. Now the printer will not print in color, and even the black printing is less than perfect with lines of no print running through the black printed text. It's a five-year-old wondering what happened.
Yeah, it's possible that the heads on the printer need to be cleaned. Usually there is a maintenance setting on most printers that you can get to on the menu on the printer itself that'll allow you to run like a calibration and cleaning. I would run it through that cycle. If it's still having a lot of problems, it may be that, I'm not sure, I don't think that printer has a drum. So it would just be the printer heads. Replacing the cartridges, obviously, is a good thing to try. If the printer heads don't work better after being cleaned, it may be that it's just run its useful course and needs to be replaced.
Yeah, yeah. Patrick in Racine, on to you. Hi, Patrick.
Hi, how are you guys?
Good, appreciate the call. What's on your mind?
Well, I have an 8th generation iPad, and I have not been able to get a update in months because it says it was full, and I know you can't update an iPad or add memory to it, and it seems I have very little. I can barely see the colors in between pictures and other things that are on the pad. It's mainly the system itself has taken up so much space that I can't get an update. And I'm wondering if there's some... I've deleted apps, and nothing seems to bring down the system info.
Beth, what do you think?
Sorry, I was on mute there. I was just saying, if you can take a look in the iPhone storage section or the iPad storage section on the general settings, it should tell you how much storage is available on at any given time. And we want to look up to see what version. I think it's iOS 17 is the latest. So we want to find out how much space you need in order to actually download and install that. And right now I'm looking at a compatibility guide. And it does say that the 8th generation iPads are compatible with iOS 17. So you should be able to update to this version. However, you'll have to make sure that the amount of space that that operating system requires is at least the amount of space that you have available in that storage. If it's all system that's taking up storage, I potentially go through each app and clear out the data associated with those apps to make sure they're not storing anything in the system files. Anything you can to get that number, that storage number down below what you need in order to download that update. It takes a lot of space while it's downloading, and then that space clears off again after it's updated.
Yeah, but that's a good point that you made there. Patrick, good luck. Appreciate it. Bill in Wausau. On to you now. Hi, Bill.
Hi, Larry. Thanks for taking my call. I have a Brother printer, a 3-in-1 or 4-in-1, whatever they call them, about a year and a half old. And when it does copies, it prints fine. But when it goes to print documents, it doesn't. And I've updated everything I can with what I can figure out on it, and I've changed the ink, and I've unplugged it and started it in, and I've put hexes on it and everything. But what can I do to get it to print documents?
When it does print, what do you mean it doesn't print well? What does it look like when it does print?
Sometimes it's all light, sometimes it's light in streaks, but it never does that when it's copying.
Okay, so the copying is working, but printing is not, and you've changed out the cartridges, I assume. I would make one thing you can check to see if, when you're printing, if you're sending it in color or if you're sending it in black and white. So when you click print and it brings up the print menu, usually you have options to choose whether it prints in color or prints in black and white. I would try switching between whatever the default is to see if it makes a difference. If it does make a difference, it's probably a problem with the driver that's installed on your machine, and updating that driver likely will take care of it.
Yep, that makes sense too.
Want to go to Brother's website and download that driver directly from the website and run the file that you download to install it, and that'll do the update for you.
Yeah, Bill, there you go. Thank you very much for calling. Pat in Slinger email. They have the iPad Mini 4, very pleased, but it's old. They were thinking of replacing it. They heard that a new version was coming out March 2024. Is there a new version? Should they replace it? It works okay. It's just old.
Yeah, I mean, there's no reason to replace something if it works for you. The only, and it's only one generation back. So I don't think you have to worry about incompatibility issues far into the future. The iPad Mini 5 came out in 2019. So there may be, I think there are more generations than that now. I don't see a date when that one is going to be discontinued. So it doesn't look like you're going to lose access to security updates. I wouldn't worry about compatibility with current software that's out there, unless it is too slow for you or it won't work with something that you're trying to use it with. I would say keep using the one you have.
Hang on to your money and hang on to your iPad Mini 4 for the time being. There you go. Jody emailed us. They're looking at retiring their Kindle Fire tablet and looking at an Apple product. They do a lot of reading on their Kindle and pictures. What are your ideas of getting maybe a used one or a new one?
Yeah, a new tablet they're really expensive. Like I said, I work on an older model, iPad Air. I do digital illustration. I do photography. I do photo editing, all kinds of, use AI image generation, all kinds of resource intensive stuff on my older generation 2 iPad Air, and it works great. So I don't see any reason personally to go out and buy brand new tech unless there is some feature on that piece of equipment that you can't get on a version older.
Tom emailed us. They have Windows Defender on their Dell. Is that enough, or does Tom need another antivirus?
Yeah, Windows Defender is the built-in version of antivirus software that Windows comes with. It's fairly decent. It's not updated as frequently as something like a Norton 360 with antivirus signatures. So I would certainly put, in addition to the Windows Defender, a retail antivirus solution on there, like a Norton or a McAfee.
All right, there you go. Beth D'Angelo, our guest today. Beth is a senior IT specialist at UW-Madison's Division of Information Technology, and she will be with us right up till 12:30 today. We are going to take a quick look at the news. We'll find out what else is in store for us here on WPR, and then we will be back with Beth. You can call us at 800-642-1234, or you can email us to ideas@wpr.org. I'm Larry Mueller. You're listening to Wisconsin Public Radio. Thanks for joining in today. We're talking technology on the show. Larry Mueller here, by the way. My guest, Beth D'Angelo, senior IT specialist at UW-Madison's Division of Information Technology. Always great to have her stop by. So, problems with your computers or your other electronics? Maybe you're having some downloading problems. Maybe your computer caught a bug. Give us a call. The number is 800-642-1234 or email to ideas@wpr.org. And let's go back to the phones. Elaine and Rothschild, thank you for calling. What's on your mind?
Hi. I have malware bytes on my computer, which I've had for years and years, and I purchase it annually. And I've had no problems with it. And it does a scan and always tells me no issues found. And that's fine. But I keep getting pop-ups all the time from AVG, and it says, there's items slowing your computer. Broken registry items, 452 found. Programs slowing down your PC, 9 found. And it always tells me this, and I just ignore it and, you know, go. It goes away. What's AVG anyway, and what is this a concern?
Beth?
Potentially have been installed as part of, you know.
Well,
we
missed the first part of your comment there, Beth.
Hi, sorry about that. Can you hear me okay?
Yeah, now we can.
I was saying AVG is a free antivirus program that sometimes that may get installed as a package with other software. So maybe on there as something that you didn't knowingly install on your machine. What I would do is go into your settings on your computer. If you go into the control panel and the software and programs section, you'll be able to see everything that's installed on your machine and look through that list and see if there's something called AVG in that list. And if there is, you can choose to uninstall it. That should stop the pop-ups from happening.
There you go, Elaine. Thank you. Gail in Viroqua, your turn. Hi, Gail.
Hi. Hi. Thanks for this timely, show. We've got a new TP-Link router, Wi-Fi 6 router, that we're installing at a new property. And I can get on with an iPad. A family member can get on with a laptop to the internet. But my husband's iPad is not recognized after using the password. And we've done the reset button. We've unplugged things. He still can't get on the internet, but our other devices can.
How new is his iPad?
His is a little, maybe a year or two older than mine. Mine's an iPad Air 2. So it did say something about maybe updating his software. He doesn't have any software update alerts, but just wondering what she could suggest.
Yeah. What do you think, Beth?
So it does connect to the internet on other, if you're on a different Wi-Fi or using mobile internet, it works just fine in those instances?
Yes.
Okay,
yes,
so it's just connecting to this router. It sounds possible. Well, I'm wondering if there's a way to try sharing the password from, if you use an iPhone, when you're in the vicinity of another Apple device, you can choose to share a Wi-Fi password when you're already connected with someone else. I wonder if that would work to actually get the initial connection to the Wi-Fi router rather than typing in the password on the iPad. That's something you could try. If it sees the device, so if in your list of available networks, it sees the Wi-Fi router that you're trying to connect to, but then when you put in the password and try to connect, it tells you that it can't. Gosh, it's possible that something in the network settings is off. But the other thing you can try, if you don't mind starting over with that iPad, would be resetting it to the factory defaults and then giving it a try to see if it'll connect. You'll want to take a backup of it first, though, so that you can reload out all the data that was on there.
Yeah.
So that's something you can try to get it to connect.
But I like that first suggestion to try first.
Yeah, it's a little less drastic than resetting the factory defaults, but there's a way to share your password. So if you have your iPhone connected to a Wi-Fi network, and then there's another Apple device nearby that wants to connect to that same Wi-Fi network, you can choose to share the password with that other device, and then they can connect to the Wi-Fi so you don't have to try to type it in.
Yeah, there you go, Gail. Thank you so much. Give it a shot. Barry in South, who's south of Eau Claire. Hi, Barry.
Hello. Can you hear me?
Yes, go ahead.
Oh, yeah. Well, I'm riding south to get to clear sky to see an eclipse. But as I was listening to your show, I'm interested. As a good WPR listener, I know that I'm going to I would like to donate my computer that's really still pretty good. But, you know, I found a newer, faster one. So I'm replacing one that maybe didn't need to be replaced. And I want to donate it. But I'd like to get it back to factory settings, everything off of it. Is there like a magic button that eliminates everything, or do I have a burdensome task ahead of me?
Yeah, honestly, if I were to donate a machine like a laptop or a desktop computer, I would remove the hard drive from it before I let it leave my hands. There really isn't a foolproof way of wiping all of the data off of a hard drive without replacing it. You can take it into a place to have them. They do something called a degauss, which is like you take a high-powered magnet to the hard drive to wipe it. There are some softwares that you can use to it basically will overwrite all the data to wipe it clean. But probably your best bet if you're going to donate is just remove the hard drive from it, and then likely whoever is taking that in as a donation is going to refurbish it anyway, so they can replace the hard drive with whatever other modifications they want to do.
Yeah. Barry, there you go. Thank you for calling. Tracy in Port Washington, it's your turn. Hi, Tracy.
Hi there. This is, I'm calling about a refurbished iPad. I would like to purchase one. Right now I have like an old Air product, and it won't go past 12.5. So I need to upgrade it because there's so many places you can't go without having a higher, I don't know what it's called.
you just want a refurbished iPad and one that's, that you can kind of get it up to date. What do you think, Beth? Beth, you there? Did we lose Beth?
Again, sorry, I was on mute. can you hear me now?
Yes.
All right, so compatible iPad models. What you're looking for is higher than iOS version 12, and the models that are compatible with those higher versions of the iOS are any of the iPad Pro the iPad Air 2, the iPad Air 1, and anything newer than the fifth generation standard iPad or the mini 2, 3, or 4.
So there's
a whole bunch of older models that are still compatible with that higher level version of the operating system.
Now, if you were going to buy one, Beth, where would you look? Where should Tracy look?
I've had really great luck on eBay, honestly. It's been my go-to for refurbished products. It's really, to me, it's about looking at the ratings for the seller. So finding a seller that has, you know, 99.9% five-star ratings, that they've done a lot of sales. So you can tell that they've had a lot of reviews. Looking through that feedback, making sure that they're selling quality products, and then looking for the particular device that you want, search for that device, and then compare prices. But I, like I said, I've purchased many legacy devices from eBay and have had good luck with all of them.
All right. Tracy, there you go. Thank you for calling. Perry in Okano, it's your turn. Hi, Perry.
Yes, hello. Can you talk about, like, the free antivirus and the malware bytes? That's, I use Avast and malware bytes, and once in a while I'll do the quick scan in the morning, but then malware bytes, as long as I'm by my computer, I just keep clicking to run through it again. Can you talk about the safety of the free ones, and what am I giving up?
Yeah, with the free version of Malwarebytes, you're certainly getting some protection for your machine. I would recommend using that in conjunction with a subscription-based antivirus product, though. The free version is not getting updated as often as the paid version. So as new viruses are developed, they create updates to the software that you have to be able to catch those new viruses. And with the free versions of antivirus software, they just release those downloads, those updates to the software at a lower frequency. So you're not going to be catching all of the newer viruses with that protection.
Perry, good luck. Thank you for calling. Devorah,
the free version, I would say, I just want to say the free version of that is really great if you're just trying to do a scan of what you have now to see if there's anything currently on your machine that is problematic. So I don't want to discount that.
Yeah, for sure. Let's see. Devorah emailed us. They have an Apple desktop OS X version 10.9.5 from 2008. Done lots of system and software updates. They bought it brought it in a while back because some videos were not working. The Apple guys said the video chip was the issue. Can this be repaired?
Yeah, it's possible that the video processor in that old laptop is, you know, I doubt that it's a broken part because video wouldn't work at all if there was an issue with the part itself. But it may be that it's old enough that it is struggling to stream specific types of video or certain formats of video.
Yeah.
Replacing one of those in a laptop is probably financially not worth it. It's probably better off to replace the machine itself because I think you have to replace the whole motherboard to do anything with the video card.
Okay.
I think it's built in.
Larry in Waupaca, your turn. Hi, Larry.
Hello. Hey, yeah, we're an Apple family. There's four of us. And I get the 5 gigabyte iCloud storage with that family sharing thing. And it always seems like I'm running out of storage. Would it behoove me to go to the 1 gigabyte for $10, or is there something else I should do for, storage? I got, like I said, I got the four phones and I got my iPad.
Yeah, so you can. I think right now you can go up to 200 gigabytes is like $2.99 a month. It's relatively inexpensive to increase your storage. There's also, Google has options for cloud-based storage if you wanted to change providers. I don't think the price difference is really that drastic. I actually do pay for additional iCloud storage because I use up quite a bit of mine. If you're using all Apple products and you have multiple family members with multiple devices that are all sharing an account, if you're running out of space, it's probably worthwhile to pay that extra fee per month to have that additional storage space. I found that, you know, we We got a little bit spoiled with cloud storage being free until we used it up, and then we ran out of the free space, and now we have to pay for more. So they got us hooked, and now we've got to pay for the extra.
There you go, Larry. Thank you for calling in. Chuck in New Berlin emailed us. He has a Lenovo IdeaPad 310 laptop that is unable to install Windows 11. Chuck understands that their motherboard is not compatible. Is it worth installing a different motherboard or better to purchase a laptop with Windows 11?
Yeah, I'm not sure with the motherboard replacement. I know that's a known issue with those, that the motherboard doesn't handle that version of the operating system. I'm not sure what the cost for a new motherboard is or whether or not you are, you know, in a position to be able to do that replacement yourself. But replacing a motherboard on a laptop is really intricate work that often will require specialized tools, and taking it to a shop, purchasing a new motherboard, taking it to a shop to have it replaced, and then doing all of the updates and installs in order to basically rebuild that the software on that machine, it'll probably end up costing you about the same as it would to buy a new machine. You may not get like the latest and greatest for that cost, but it's going to run into several hundreds of dollars.
Brian in Fort Atkinson, on to you. Hi, Brian.
Hello. This may be a question you haven't had before. Because of medical concerns, our family's been urged not to bring a Wi-Fi router into the house, and I'm having trouble finding one where it's just hardwired. And I'm just wondering if you know of any routers that would be non-Wi-Fi, where everything would just be wired.
I believe that, so there are hybrid routers out there that have Wi-Fi and a hardwire connection built into them, where you're able to just switch off the Wi-Fi antennas. But there are, let me just get a couple of models for you. So it's not going to be a Wi-Fi router. It's just going to be a standard Ethernet router that you're looking for. And let me just see what consumer models are out there right now.
Should be some out there.
Yeah. Netgear is making them. TP-Link has them. So right now, Best Buy has a Netgear 5-port wired router. There's no Wi-Fi built into that for about $50. So that'll give you 5 different ports that you can wire connections to.
For $50.
Yep. You want to make sure the devices you're wiring up to have an Ethernet card that isn't Wi-Fi only, that it actually has the jack connection for a wired Internet connection as well.
Yeah. There you go, Brian. Appreciate your call. John emailed us. They paid for PBS Passport membership, but it won't allow them to access the programs unless their location is made available on their iPhone, which is how they receive Internet. If they activate location service on the iPhone, they believe that makes it possible for marketers to track them 24/7, which gives information they don't want shared. What uses do marketers make of that information, and how can they block locations without losing their PBS Passport services?
Yeah, you actually should be able to open up the location services just for that app. So you have the ability within the location services on your phone to choose which applications can track your location and which can't, rather than just shutting it off for all of them across the board. So if you do want the location to be available to that app, you can actually set that up either in the settings for that specific app or in the location settings in general. It'll list that app and you can turn it on. As far as what's tracked, you know, really what they're trying to do is send you targeted marketing ads. So if they know where you are, they can send you ads for services or goods that are available in your area. They can send you marketing specific to, you know, if you're traveling in a place, they can send you, oh, while you're in Orlando, please come see this, go to this show in your Google pop-ups or your Facebook ads. So that's really what they're using them for.
Yeah, there you go. Marsha emailed us. She plans to replace the drum and laser cartridge for her brother's black and white laser printer. Both are needed. She wants to know, should she go with a brand name or a compatible drum and or cartridge? If a compatible is suggested, is there a source for a good compatible?
Yeah, I would say if you're not doing any professional level printing, you could probably get by with just buying a compatible level drum. I know the drum is generally the most expensive part to replace on a printer, and the brand name parts are usually a couple of times more than the just compatible parts are. So prices really widely vary. Amazon is a great place to find, you know, all of the various vendors for those compatible parts. And using their rating system, their reviews as a way to, you know, determine which are better functioning and more reputable would be the direction I would go.
Paula in Whitewater emailed us. She has an iPad 6th generation version 17.4.1. Why can she text some phone numbers in messages and not others? Her husband's iPhone can text all numbers.
I'm sorry, was it an iPad or an iPhone that they're texting?
iPad.
Oh, okay. So from an iPad. With an iPad, it's using the iMessage function to text. So what it's probably doing is not allowing you to send text messages to non-Apple products using SMS messaging, and it's only using the iMessage function. So you probably have to go into the messaging settings and turn on the allow SMS function so that you can message non-Apple products.
Oh, that's how you do it. Okay. Mm-hmm. Thank you. Thank you very much for that question, Paula. Appreciate it very much. And, you know, here we are about out of time. Beth, it's always a pleasure. Any one last minute of advice for anybody?
No, I mean, lots of great questions today. I think we centered around a lot of antivirus and printer problems, and glad to help out. Thanks for having me.
We didn't get into net neutrality, unfortunately, but we don't have enough time for that.
It's coming back. That's what you need to know. It's coming back.
It is coming back. That's for sure. So, and there's lots written about it right now. Beth, thanks so much. Beth DeAngelo, Senior IT Specialist of UW-Madison's Division of Information Technology, and she'll be back in a couple of months, and we'll do this all over again with her, and I'm looking forward to it. Beth DeAngelo. Well, coming up tomorrow on the Larry Mueller Show, we'll learn about two diseases that impact the nervous system. One is multiple sclerosis. The other is Sjogren's disease. And we're going to have a couple of doctors join in to share the latest treatments and research on this. I'm looking forward to it, and I hope you are too. That's tomorrow at 11 on the Larry Mueller Show. In the meantime, you know what? There's lots of good programming coming up right through the afternoon, and I hope you stay with us. I'm Larry Mueller for Wisconsin Public Radio.